Welcome back to another week of free basketball post NBA draft. Hope everyone enjoyed the NBA draft. I am joined by Daniel Greer. Might have a feature from an old pal later, but I don't want to say that he's going to be here because that might actually change. So it might just be me and Daniel the whole time. Who knows? But we're going to talk a little bit about the NBA draft as we kind of move on into free agency. And of course, if you follow the NBA draft, you love Summer League. So Summer League is coming up. So we got a couple episodes probably before Summer League actually gets started. But let's talk a little bit about the NBA draft. Number one, pick number one, being a shock. Were you shocked, Daniel? Paolo Banchero going number one to the Orlando Magic, who did not work out Paolo. Paolo did not work out for them. Mm. All signs were pointing to Jabari Smith, and the betting markets themselves were flip-flopping back and forth, and Jabari Smith was a heavy favorite. That was a whole weird thing. I know you were following along with that. Was the Banchero pick surprising to you? Or was he always your number one player in this draft anyways?
He was my number one player, and he was the guy who I would have taken first just because I think he's the most polished. But I think he also does, you know, he gives me a lot of the player comps that when I look at his game, I think it's something that transfers over to the NBA game much easier than Chet or even Jabari. So I would have taken Paolo, and even on the mock draft we did on Spotify Live with a bunch of, you know, group of people I was invited over to, I actually was given the number one pick, and I was picking for the Orlando Magic, and they all thought I was taking Jabari or whatever, and I kept spinning it. Finally, I laid it out and took Paolo Banchero, and the whole room just kind of just started making fun of me, but they didn't on draft night.
Oops. Look at somebody knows what they're talking about.
And our bet. Hey.
That was a nice one. Yeah. I enjoyed that thoroughly after I thought, oh, we switched to favorites. Oh, now we're back down to plus 1800 or whatever.
I got a question on that. And I would just, you know, real quick, I know we don't want to be long here tonight. Do you think that Woj got paid to send out that tweet?
I don't think so. To say that it was Jabari?
He moved millions of dollars around.
You think there was that much money going in the NBA draft?
I don't know. But like the fact that he came out and put it out that these three guys we picked in this order, they took everything off the board. And when it came back, it was like just astronomical, like just complete changes. Do you not think that people might have then hit Paolo or another guy, you know, even Chet later, because their odds are so high? You don't think they could have just possibly just got a free, you know, big ticket? I don't know. I wish I would have had him at 8 plus 1800.
Yeah, I don't know what happened with that. It was a weird series of events. I mean, this draft was kind of weird for the reporting in general, but that was certainly a shock, and was very pleased to see actually come through with Paolo going number one. But it did go kind of chalk after that until we got to the Sacramento Kings. So Paolo goes first, Chet goes second, Jabari goes third. That was obvious. That was the consensus top three, no matter what. It just depended on the order. And it seemed like Chet was always locked in at two. So we just got the 1-3 flip, and it started off the draft interesting until the Kings, who everyone just mocked Jaden Ivey there at four because best player available. Kings are going to do that. They'll figure out the fit later. Just take the best player available. Not so fast, sir. They take Keegan Murray, which leads Jaden Ivey to fall right into the laps of the Detroit Pistons. And I do want to talk about Detroit. Do you think that the Detroit Pistons won the draft tonight?
Easily. I think if you come away, they sent out Jeremy Grant, right? And they got back a first round pick because of that, right? Well, then they were able to go get, with that first round pick, they're able to go get a Jalen Duren. and they didn't have to do anything else, but pretty much used the present they were given back from Portland and gave that away. So really, you get Jaden Ivey, you get a big, and they needed a big. And so you get everything you possibly need. You now have Cade off the ball, and then you can move, you know, guys to the bench that might have been playing last year. Man, I think they did really, really good in this draft, and they got the pieces they need to be a good, good fun team. This might be the league pass team this year.
Yeah, I think when it went down where and when Ivy fell into her lap at five, I thought, wow, this is just imagine if they signed DeAndre Ayton to this team, and this was before they got Jalen Duren. It's like, man, imagine if they got Ayton to this, but they went with Jalen Duren, which to me, I actually like better for them, right? Like,
yeah,
I think DeAndre Ayton thinks he's a max player. Is that a $25 to $30 million player?
Right.
And am I really getting that much less out of Jalen Duren at 90% of the cost? Now, I know there will probably be – I'm going to ask you if that's crazy to think about because DeAndre Ayton was in the finals last year, had some big moments. He was basically the only reason they advanced past the Pelicans in round one before they fell apart in round two against the Mavericks. I get it was a game seven. Anything could happen, but they fell apart in game seven, right? Just didn't show up. Flat out didn't show up. And he has that issue with Monty Williams where he doesn't go back into the game. So do you think that maybe Detroit was kind of like it feels like they were the front runners to go for somebody like DeAndre Ayton. Like they're a very obvious team that needs a center like that, that needs a defensive minded guy who can play pick and roll, can actually finish around the rim a little bit. They seem just like an obvious fit for him. But do you think that what kind of happened at the end of that Mavericks-Suns thing, do you think that could have scared them off a little bit to being like, man, maybe we shouldn't commit so much money to someone like him? And that's why they flipped to taking Jalen Duren. Do you think that could be a causation from that?
Yeah, I definitely do think that didn't help him. But also, if you look at their style of play, Jalen Duren is going to be a monster on the glass. He's going to be a guy who can rim protect. He's also going to be somebody who can do, you know, the pick and roll through the lane, throw it up to for the, you know, the alley-oop dunks. He is more athletic than, you know, DeAndre Ayton is. And so I think that fits their team. But one thing he doesn't need the basketball in the offensive end. He just does not need it. So when you get a guy like Jaden Ivey, you already have a guy like Cade Cunningham who need the ball. Those two really do need the ball to be the most effective. I think going with a guy who's much cheaper, he's under control for the next 4 years. I think that they lucked out with not having to go after somebody. And still, you know, you still have Sadiq Bey there, right? So all they did was let go of Jeremy Grant, and you still have a guy like Sadiq Bey who's just as good, you know, who can fulfill and even, you know, get better, you know, in certain roles. And you still have, what, Beef Stew still there. So there's a lot to like on this team. I really do like Detroit. I think they're going to be still young, but I still think they're going to be frisky. And, you know, if our tiers, they would definitely be in frisky this year.
The thing is about this team, the only thing that holds me back is Dwayne Casey. Last I checked, he's still their head coach. And to me, this is a very obvious, they need a new coach soon. Maybe this is his last year with them. And we see this a lot with young teams, like Dwayne Casey's kind of holding water for the franchise in transition. Then when the team's about to get ready to take off, they get someone else new in there. So I don't expect, like, just ask the Toronto Raptors what they did with Dwayne Casey. So I don't think Dwayne Casey's long for the team. I think this could very well be his last year. Maybe he does get two, but I think sooner rather than later, when this team is ready to take another step forward, Dwayne Casey will not be the guy as head coach. So that's the only reason that I'm kind of tempering my excitement with this, because Dwayne Casey is old school gets. Now I'm sure he's modernized a little bit, but the same old school fundamental stuff does not change. And players like Cade and Jaden Ivey, you can't put bridles on. You got Jalen Duren, who does not need a bridle. They're all thoroughbreds, and you need to just let them loose. So that's the only worry I have with this team is Dwayne Casey going to actually let them get out and run? So they're a fun team on paper. I'm interested by what it looks like on the court because the fit is seamless for sure. Now, of course, I do want to talk about Dyson Daniels a little bit, and I actually want to talk about the division for the Memphis Grizzlies. There's no secret on this podcast that we are both avid Memphis Grizzlies fan. And last I checked, we're in the Southwest Division. And they drafted, of course, two of my favorite players to join the division in Dyson Daniels with the New Orleans Pelicans and Jeremy Sochan with the next pick at 9 to the San Antonio Spurs. So let's have a little cry session here for the Memphis Grizzlies. Let's just let it out for a second. I think we deserve this. Are you as bummed that as I am that both of those players that you know were kind of like 1-2 on my favorite team? Like, if the Grizzlies are moving up to get anybody, these were two guys that I wanted badly. And now both guys are in our division. Are you as depressed about that as I am? Or, yeah, it's fine. Whatever. We've got the better team regardless.
All right, so I think about it two different ways. One, I do think we do have the best team out of those. But the two different ways I think about it is one with the Pelicans. They have the best player. I think he's much better. Dyson Daniels is much better than Jeremy Sochan, in my opinion. But what I like brings me comfort is knowing that he went to the New Orleans Pelicans. And there's just no way that they're not going to mess it up. So it is what it is. Like, take LeBron for all I care. You'll mess that up too. Whatever. I don't care. Send KD there. You'll figure out a way to completely screw it up. And so with that being said, I'm not scared of, Sochan and San Antonio. Now, don't be wrong. If he's going to be the best version of himself, he's probably going to be the best version of himself there. But I think he's a little overrated. And I just don't love the player. I think he's a skinnier, less shooter than David Roddy. Is that a shot? Is that a shot?
That's definitely a shot. Yeah, that kind of hurts me a little bit.
I just think that he, I think his potential is there. But as you know, sometimes you just never reach your full potential. And I don't see him ever reaching his full potential. I don't know what that potential is and what people actually think. I think he's a player that's good. He's built well. Like he said, he is the guy who you want. I don't think he can stretch the floor like people think he really can.
I think, to be fair to Jeremy Sochan, I think he's a guy who, we see a lot every year where, most of these guys do not end up with this team after the first couple of years, right?
Yeah.
And to me, Jeremy Sochan he's a second or third team guy. Not all NBA, but on his second or third different team before he solidifies himself as the key rotational piece that I think he could be. So not a right away scary situation for the Spurs, but just to give a shout out to the division, because I think very soon, if not proven already in last year's playoffs, the Southwest Division is the best division in NBA basketball. And I get it because the Phoenix Suns and the Golden State Warriors are in the same division. Sure. But let's look at the Dallas Mavericks with Luka. Okay. They draft Jaden Hardy, great value in the second round. Then you got to talk about, of course, the Houston Rockets. They took Tari Eason, which was a player that was popular with Grizzlies fans. They added, grief. I'm completely blanking. I should have had the sheet in front of me. I cannot think of who the players were besides for the Rockets now, but I know Tari Eason was one of them. I feel like it was another guard and I can't remember, but the Spurs also got Malachi Branham and I'm blanking on that one too.
Well, the problem is I'm trying to look at this sheet of where everybody went. And it's not on like your regular stuff, like because the trades haven't happened. So you have to like go digging for all of the players, because if you pull up ESPN or any site, it's all still the
original.
Yeah, it's the original teams. Like, it's confusing to me too. But they had good draft nights.
Everyone in our division had a good draft night, and it's a real bummer because it's a division that has a lot of interesting mix of really young, high star power potential talent mixed with kind of older potential role-playing veteran guys. So obviously they're not going to be in the division on their teams for forever, but it is an interesting scenario to where the Southwest could very soon be the best division in the NBA. But to kind of, I guess, generally wrap up the draft, did you find the draft to be an interesting, exciting one, or was it more of a dud that we've seen? Because everyone's talking about the trades and all that kind of stuff. There was going to be a lot of movement. I thought this was going to be kind of like a free agency period because there wasn't a lot of money to go around. And there was a handful of players that moved. But overall, there wasn't a massive thing. There wasn't a massive trade or move. Probably the most significant move of the night was Paolo going number one. And so what was your kind of general thoughts leaving the draft? You're like, okay, well, that was another draft. Or were you really that into it?
Yeah, after seeing what happened and how it unfolded is I think we all had expectations that this could be the craziest night at draft night in a long, long time. It just wasn't. Like, now it started off with a bang, right? Like Banchero goes number one. You're like, all right, like this is about to go nuts. But then you look at the next picks and it pretty much goes as is. The Sacramento Kings are going to king, right? That's what they do. They went for Keegan Murray. But it was just, it was okay. Like, guys kind of fell in their draft spots. Some guys went a little higher than they, you know, were mocked to go, as that's always expected. The trades just weren't there. The free agents, the players did not move. It didn't have the buzz that it normally has. But it was a fun night overall. It was the first time I actually did from, the first, pick to the last pick. Actually, we went on Spotify Live and shout out Ant Wright, who does a room over there. We were on there for 4 hours the whole time talking about and breaking stuff down. It was a lot of fun. And so we had people that were just pretty much chiming in the entire night. And so that part was fun. And we watched it live. Everybody just turned off their Woj bombs. And so it was a good night overall, but definitely it didn't live up to the expectations that we all had.
Yeah. And what's funny about it is we're going to do it all again next year. It's going to be the craziest draft ever. And then we're going to be talking about how much of a dud it was, which my kind of final thing on this is just the class in general, because the draft night was overall a dud for fireworks. In general, I mean, I think it was interesting to start with Paolo going number one. That was a surprise. Then the Kings taking Keegan. And it was just the thought, oh, the Pistons, Cade and Jaden. Oh, my God, this is how this starts? The rest of it's going to be nuts. And like you said, just kind of fell apart from there. But is this draft class a dud itself? I know there was a lot of people that said they're very intrigued with this class. This is a deeper class, not a lot of star power to me. And I think that, like, where people fell and where people actually got drafted, it basically went chalk for the most part after we got past the top five. Do you think it's just because when we look back at this class, this is going to be an actually underwhelming class? Because, most of the time, out of the top five, you get two out of the five are all-star, get an all-star appearance. So if you're talking about all-star appearances, I would think for you at the forefront, you're thinking Paolo and Jaden Ivey. Is that actually unrealistic to think that there's two all-star players in this top five class? And are we going to look back at this and look, guys taken in the late 20s, early second round, are going to have more value to NBA franchises than what this top 7 to 10 guys had.
Yeah, I think if you look at it, you got to look at the two teams from the East, in all honesty, because I think there's a lot of young talent in the West and the East as well, but there's a lot of young talent that's already kind of arrived in the West. And so if you look at the East, like you just said, Paolo and Jaden, I think those two guys could make the All-Star team. But after that, it's just a bunch of projects. It literally is. Mm. So yes, you're going to have a lot of boom and a lot of bust, but how big are the booms? And I don't know how big of a boom you're getting out of a guy like Shaedon Sharpe, Dyson Daniels. I think they have potential. I know it's there, but it could be a bust. They could be, you know, a guy that, you know, is in the league for 10 years, but they just never get up to their potential. But I do think if you had to say anything with this draft, I think it's the draft class that gives out role players. And I think you're going to have a bunch of role players that find a 10-year career in this league who does a lot of good things. They work really hard, and, you know, the potential, the ceiling is not, you know, crazy high, but they do the right things. And I think that's what you're in the end. I think that's what we look back on this draft class and see.
Yeah, I think that's a fair summation of that. We'll end it with that. So any other kind of closing thoughts from the draft or anything you want to plug before we go for this week?
I don't think I have anything to plug. If you're a Grizzlies fan, go check out our Grizz 901 podcast that we're doing. But just looking back at it, I think a team like the Thunder finally had a good draft. They gave up some picks. They went and got Usman Dang from the Knicks at 11. And so you want to talk about a team that now has Chet Holmgren, right, that they just drafted. Usman Dang, who's just freak, man. He's just a freak and just coming out of his ears. And then they made this, and this is probably their biggest mistake of draft night. And they screwed their PR team when they went and got Jalen Williams and Jalen Williams. What a crazy moment. Do you think that they just said, hey, we like Jalen Williams, and somebody goes, which one? And you just say, well, I don't know, just go get both of them.
We have the picks to do it. Just do it. Yeah, I love that, because they already did the Spider-Man meme.
That was awesome.
Pointing at each other. So that's it. It's a fun situation with the Thunder. We didn't do winners and losers and grades and steals of the draft and all that stuff, because, you know, draft grades are probably, you know, it's just our opinion, which for most draft stuff is probably going to be incredibly wrong in a couple of years. So I did want to just talk about a little overarching themes overall, but didn't get too deep into it, but hit some general topics. So we will be back next week. There might be more to this episode. Who knows? I'm just going to leave it at that, but there might be more to this episode. If not, Daniel, good to see you. I'm sure I'll talk to you next week.
See ya.
All right, part two of our episode for this week for Free Basketball. I alluded earlier that we might or might not have another guest, but it's not actually a guest. It is a guy in a Jordan-like return. Two-word phrase, I'm back.
Mm-hmm.
One of the original, the OGs, the co-host that has been teased to return for, what, 4 months now?
Mm-hmm.
Cody Holsey, two years. A 24-month Klay Thompson-like return. Mm-hmm. Cody Holsey.
What's up?
It is nice to hear your voice. For a lot of people or a lot of new listeners, this will probably be the first time you've ever heard Cody. Mm-hmm. So buckle up.
It might be.
This is a lot of fun. I have had a lot of people asking, where's the R-rated version of Free Basketball been? And with Cody's return, it's back.
It's so back.
High standards. high standards, but Cody's back. And we're going to talk about something that is the only thing that we can appropriately talk about with a return of our Free Basketball star. It's Kyrie Irving. We are going to do a little bit on Kyrie Irving in that situation. And to start, the first thing I want to even ask is, in the broader landscape of the NBA, does this potential Kyrie fallout from Kevin Durant and the Brooklyn Nets actually matter?
Well, I mean, I think it does, because what, like, Kevin Durant, it has how many years left on his contract?
A full four, I believe.
That's what I think it is too. But if I'm going to be wrong, I want us to be wrong together. So I'm pretty sure that he's got 4 years left on his deal, which in today's NBA means jack shit. It means absolutely nothing, because at the end of the day, he's just going to be like, if he decides he doesn't want to play there, then what are they going to do? Because they let Kyrie like not play last year.
Right.
So like, he's just going to be like, all right, cool. I'm just going to go, like, I'll just go play FIFA for the next like 4 months. I'll just go play basketball, like, wherever. Like, I'll just go to LA Fitness and play basketball.
Yeah, he's already forfeited a lot of money last year by not taking the vaccine. Doesn't seem like he really cares about losing a lot of money this time with this contract either. But the reason I ask that is because, do we still hold Kyrie Irving in high esteem as a championship level player? Would you say that he is?
No. I think he is a talented player, but like, at this point, is he he had that he was in the finals, like he was like number two guy on the LeBron, like, comeback from 3-1 championship team. Like, he's got that. But like, other than that, like, is he not like, you know, Gilbert Arenas?
Oh, so if he doesn't hit that basically championship ceiling three over Steph Curry, do you think that we're having this kind of conversation all the time about Kyrie?
No, I don't think so. I think he's just another point guard that people are like, yeah, like, he could be great. Like, he just doesn't, like, he doesn't give a shit.
So the difference to you maybe is that if he doesn't have a ring and have that moment in the finals, and, well, he had a great finals anyways, right? But just if he doesn't have that moment, is he as big of a deal? And are we discussing more as like we discussed John Wall?
I think he's exhibit A for, like, when people say LeBron doesn't make players around him better, he is exhibit A for, he absolutely does. Look at Kyrie pre-LeBron, Kyrie with LeBron, Kyrie post-LeBron. Because post-LeBron, it's been a dumpster fire. He's had some moments where he's played really well, but like, everybody has moments where they've played. Devin Booker scored 70 points in a game. He played in the finals last year. He didn't win the finals.
So it's kind of like
Booker's a really good player, but Devin Booker also played all the games.
So kind of like with LeBron, with his greatness, was able to carry Kyrie through his kind of weird situations. It was kind of starting right back then, and now it's full blown. Kyrie hasn't been with a guy who has been able to carry him through that kind of stuff.
Right. Well, like, in Kyrie, like, I also think that, like, being with LeBron keeps him from, like, kind of, like, LeBron doesn't need all this distraction. Like, we're trying to win titles. Shut up. Like, I don't know exactly, like, what would happen, but I just don't feel like LeBron would put up with this crap.
Yeah. And because this kind of gets to where I think this is. Because I'm with you. I don't think Kyrie, in the landscape of the NBA right now, I don't think he's a difference maker to a championship level team. Now, I know the Nets were valued as if not the favorite most of the year to win the NBA championship, but
most of the year they had James Harden on the team too.
That's totally fair. Totally fair. And a lot of people were picking them to upset the Celtics in round one as a 7-2 upset. But what I think most of this is right now is I don't think Kyrie's a big difference maker. And we'll talk about the Lakers stuff in just a minute. But to me, and I just want to get your opinion to see if you agree on this, but this whole thing where we're only going to talk about Kyrie and what happens with him and KD is everyone just hoping that it completely fails because they want to point the finger at Kevin Durant. Would you, like, you should have never left Golden State. You had a perfect situation. You left to join up with this guy. It completely backfired. Look at you. Screw you. You're an idiot. Do you think that most of this drama is kind of anchored around that ideology?
I mean, yeah. I mean, everybody, I think, like, Kevin Durant's a really interesting, like, person, just, like, from a fan perspective because of how people, like, perceive him. Like, he went to Oklahoma City and played in Oklahoma City and everybody really liked Kevin Durant when he played for the Thunder. But then he went to the Warriors and everybody really, not everybody, but a lot of people were like, we don't like you at all. You went and joined, you know, that's like a bitch move. You went and joined up with the evil empire. You joined the Warriors. Mm. Like, you did the 2010 LeBron thing. And then he leaves the Warriors to go to the Nets and everybody hates him for that too. So, like, no matter what he does, like, he's kind of, like, damned if he does, damned if he doesn't. Like, he's got to play with Russ in OKC if he stays there. And, I mean, I think all of us have seen what a picnic that's been for everyone else who's ever played with him since then. Mm. And if he goes to the Warriors and he is the finals MVP two times, outplays LeBron in the finals twice, and it's still Steph's team. Like, it's definitely not Kevin Durant's team. So he, like, has that, like, weird, like, deal there. And then he goes to Brooklyn and it's just been a disaster.
Because I don't want to derail talking about Kyrie, but I do think it sets up for us to, you know, we're just kind of in this generation now, which probably they did the generation before, but social media is so prevalent now. You can get access to it, mm-hmm. to any kind of thoughts, obviously. But I think it is setting up to where we're going to have this whole discussion about Kevin Durant and trying to illegitimize him as an all-time great and as a, you know, two-time he has a ring, mm-hmm. you know, finals MVP, all that kind of stuff. We're going to try to delegitimize all of this because of what happened with Kyrie and what happened with the Nets. And how he was he made poor decisions. He had it all set up, you know, greats like Tim Duncan would never do this. Kobe wouldn't do this. You know what I mean? Right. Kobe got players to play with him and he carried them. KD went and joined the Warriors to win. And then he tried to join with Kyrie to win and it fell apart. So I don't like where this is going for the narrative on KD all time historically. And I think generally rating guys all time historically is kind of stupid too, because it's apples to oranges, right? You cannot really compare Jerry West to Russell Westbrook. But I just don't like where it's going for KD, as he's kind of, and I don't want to say he's the victim because he did create the situation, right? Like, he is partially to blame for what is going on in Brooklyn. And I think mm-hmm. that's fair to put that blame on him. But I also think there is a segment where it's going to be unfair to where we characterize his entire NBA career based off these moves that he's made for the past, 7 years?
Yeah.
And so I don't like that part, but getting back to Kyrie, obviously the Lakers have put it out there that they would be interested in Kyrie. Kyrie has a list of teams they'd like to go to. Obviously, all of them cannot sign him. They have no money to do it. They don't really have any moves that they can make to create cap salary space for him. So it's kind of like a sign and trade, or mostly I think for a lot of it's going to have to be Kyrie has to take some vet minimum or something like that, which is like $8 million if I remember right, but I can't remember. But even so, we talked about the first thing I asked you was, in the landscape of the NBA, does it really matter? Do you think it matters to the Lakers and their championships hopes? Do you think the Lakers turn into a championship favorite if for some reason Kyrie is just like, screw it, I'll take the vet minimum, I'll join up with AD and LeBron, let's try it again. Do you think they are the NBA title favorites?
No.
No. Okay. Would it just be because of all the stuff that comes with Kyrie, or do you think the team just in general outside of those three is just not up to it?
Yeah. I mean, I think that's a good team, but like also like show me like Kyrie play more than like show me that you can play more than the number of games you've played over the last like four seasons.
Mm.
Like play some serious basketball and then come. Like, I don't believe, like, I'm at the point now where like, yeah, I think he's good, but like, I don't think he plays like, I don't know. I just don't think he's like a winning basketball player.
Yeah. I mean, if you're going to kind of break it down, what's a realistic expectation we think Kyrie wants to play in NBA season? 50 games? Maybe 60?
I don't know.
Would that be too high? Like to think that, is it unreasonable to suspect that Kyrie probably would play 60 games?
I mean, like, would he play 60% of the games?
That's the next thing. Cause I think when you have to talk about joining the Lakers, I think you have to talk about them as favorites anyways, what they could potentially be record wise, setting themselves up for a deep playoff run. If you're max amount you're getting, best case scenario is Kyrie. If most of the games are 50, Kyrie improve your winning percentage to 60% wins? If so, what is that? 35, 36 wins? And so what happens with those other 22 games? We already saw what LeBron and AD by themselves. AD can't stay healthy. And LeBron is getting older, even though he had a great season at age 38 or whatever it was. I mean, it's like if they have Kyrie play 60 games and we'll give him a healthy, he's a 60% winner, which I wouldn't say that of Kyrie. He's not a 60% winner probably for his entire career on his own, but let's just give him a little bit of a bump for that sake, right? So you're talking about 35, 36 wins.
Yeah, I'm looking it up while you talk about it. You keep going. I'm going to find out what Kyrie Irving's win percentage is.
Yeah, I mean, like, where's the other 14 wins you're getting at to get to 50 wins? I mean, are you just beating up on bad teams for those other 14 wins? Because you know LeBron's going to need time off. We know for sure that AD's going to need time off. So it's just the cohesion thing about it that I cannot commit to the idea that the Lakers signed Kyrie on a vet minimum. All of a sudden they're a 55 win team and they're going to be a finals favorite. Like to me, they're still a 44 to max 46 win team. And that's on the high side. So I think the projection of that is interesting, but if you were an NBA team that was on the cusp, that was a player away, would you be interested in Kyrie at all?
No, I really wouldn't, because I think like, I just think all the like bullshit that comes with it is not worth it. If you're a player away, then you're pretty close. And that means that you don't need any like distractions or any like off the court crap. Like I actually think the only way that like, while I don't think that it makes the Lakers a championship team, I really think the only way that like Kyrie kind of like chills out and like kind of falls in line and does what he's supposed to is if he's back with like LeBron again, because like they've mm-hmm. played together and it seems like LeBron knows how to like push the right buttons to get him to at least like play well and be like a dependable teammate. So I don't know, like if it takes LeBron James being your teammate to get you to be successful, then that's probably how you're going to have to be successful. You're probably not like the number one guy. You're probably not like the leader. You probably need somebody who's going to tell you, like, who's not your friend, not Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving, who are buddies. You need somebody who's not necessarily your friend, but is a good like teammate and like wants to win a title, or like, you know, whatever goal the team has, they're going to keep everyone focused on that goal.
It's an interesting point, because if I don't want to get into this whole what teams should be interested in Kyrie thing, but Like the most obvious team that stands out, which is hilarious to me to even think about the possibility of that again, is the Boston Celtics, right? Like they need they're like a Kyrie Irving away from winning the finals this year.
Are they a Kyrie Irving away? Because they had Kyrie Irving and basically that same team.
That's what I'm saying, is that with the fit, with Al Horford, you know, Tatum, Brown are older, Marcus Smart, like they were missing a guy who could attack the basket, right?
They were missing a guy when he was on the court.
That's what's funny about it to me, is it's the team that's most obvious to me that could use him the most. And he's already been there, and how terrible that situation was and how it ended. But it's just funny to me how that kind of circular thing comes back. Because if there was just like, if I'm picking a team for Kyrie that he could help the most, it's the Celtics. That's really funny. Funny where I landed out on that kind of thought exercise about it.
One of my favorite things on Basketball Reference is the similarity scores to different players. And I just want to read you, like, some these names on this list aren't bad. But starting at the most similar to least similar, like 1 to 10. So we have Kyrie Irving. Next is Dick Van Arsdale.
Okay.
Next we have Mitch Richmond. So Dick Van Arsdale is the closest. Mitch Richmond is the second. This is through 10 years. We got Stephon Marbury. We have Rod Strickland. Louis Dampier. Joe Dumars, Andre Miller, Gus Williams, Derek Harper, and Jason Kidd is like the furthest away.
Wow.
On the list of people that are there.
On that list, Stephon Marbury is what stands out to me.
Yeah. And if you go for career, Stephon Marbury is on that list too.
And who was right after Stephon? Who's after Marbury?
Rod Strickland.
Rod Strickland. Those two stuck out the most to me, which is really interesting because I think you can kind of surmise, like, that's kind of how his career has been, right? Like,
a lot of talent and just kind of like not the, but just not the guy.
Just does not have it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't know if it's setting up for Kyrie to dominate China for the next decade.
He might be. He could be a hot commodity in Italy.
Well, I don't know how much more I want to do on Kyrie. I just, with you coming back, I think it was the most obvious topic to talk about, because I know we always have thoughts about this kind of stuff because we try to think about it in a bigger picture sense instead of just like what we see, you know, on TV. Oh, Kyrie wants out, you know, hurting his buddy, or
right,
cool to get him on the Lakers. So I think it was good to get back on here. Get your feedback. We don't want to wear you out too much since you're just jumping back into the game. So this is kind of like, just like Klay Thompson's return. You're getting your 15 to 20 minutes, test the knee out.
Yeah.
And you're with an increased role over time.
I'm still in 3-on-3. I haven't played full 5-on-5.
3-on-3. We're not limited. 5-on-5 yet.
Yeah. Limited contact.
But I will say next week it'll be full 5-on-5, full contact. No
full
rest.
Court scrimmage, full contact.
There will be no minutes restrictions, Zion.
Perfect.
You'll be back next Sunday. Hopefully we'll get the trio back together again. It'll be the first time in a while. Probably talk about free agency since I believe that is supposed to start this week. So we might have some fireworks early since the draft overall was a dud on that front. So it's going to be a fun week. Cody, I can't even describe how fantastic it was to see you and hear your voice on this podcast again, man.
Oh, it is. It's great to see your dimly lit face and poorly internet connectedness.
We're back, baby. We are back. So to many more episodes to come with drop signals and bad audio, but it's nice to be back once again, old co-host, co-star. So everyone have a good week. Hope everyone enjoys free agency, gets all the players that they ever dreamed of, even though we know that's not going to happen.
I'm a free agent.
Free agent? What?
I'm in free agency right now.
Oh, okay. So we gotta sign you on a some sort of. We'll do some one-on-one vet minimum kind of stuff.
Yeah, that's what I need. I need a vet minimum.
Yeah, like a Greg Monroe.
You guys have a lot of cap space tied up right now, so I'm just, you know, I'm easing my way back in here. I'll be back to alpha dog status soon, but.
This is great. Everyone have a good week. We will see you next Monday.
Later.